Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When you are neighbors, sometimes you borrow things, share things, help each other out, and that goes for neighbor nations too sometimes, like the Republic of Mexico and the United States. But what happens when that relationship is out of balance? The partnership is unequal. Does it become a neighbor-like relationship, kind of like a Homer Simpson and Ned Flanders? Maybe we aren't just borrowing lawnmowers, but labor and oil. UT Professor of Anthropology Martha Menchaca says that's the case in her new book, The Politics of Dependency, U.S. Reliance on Mexican Oil and Farm Labor. And she joins us from the studios of KUT in Austin. And Professor Menchaca, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Our phone lines are open, and we want to hear your calls. Give us a question or comment, 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Email questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. So, Martha, you pair up two interesting things from Mexico, oil and labor. Why these two things?
Well, I wanted to examine U.S.-Mexico relations in regards to trade and the politics of both governments. And I found that the United States and Mexico trade many items and have been doing this for many years. But for the United States, only crude oil and farm labor are essential commodities that the United States really relies on. And this has benefited Mexico and has given it a lot of power to negotiate relations over the years. The relations between Mexico and the United States are not like they were in the 19th century, when the United States government and U.S. corporations really had full control of Mexico. And that pretty much ended in 1910. That's one of the reasons Mexico had its revolution. And these relations have evolved over time. So that's what I examine in my book by looking at energy, human energy, which is the farm labor, and crude oil, which is needed for our energy in the United States.
I do want to focus on the issue of labor, the history of farm labor coming from Mexico and illegal immigration and NAFTA and all that. We'll get into all that, but let's explore a little bit more about the oil aspect. Many people aren't familiar with the fact that Mexico is the third largest supplier of oil to the United States, where we take basically every drop of oil that they can produce that they will sell us, and that when we talk about oil independence for the United States, we frequently use that phrase in the context of a continental independence, inclusion of all the of Mexican oil as well.
Yes, the United States, since World War II, learned that it needed Mexico to develop its oil industry. Before that, U.S. corporations had developed the oil industry in Mexico, but they basically did whatever they wanted, kept the profits, did not want to have Mexicans to be part of it or manage it. 1938, Mexico nationalized the oil industry, basically kicked off foreign corporations and kept the profits. This created great strain and problems between the United States and Mexico. There were government and corporate embargoes against Mexico to try to force Mexico into returning the oil businesses to the United States and to Great Britain. But what ended up happening is we have the outbreak of World War II, and the United States learned that it was very necessary to have Mexico develop its industry because of national security. And throughout time, there have been many incidents in which Mexico allied itself with the United States, especially during the Iran conflict over the hostages in 1979, when OPEC and Iran were decreasing its oil supplies to the United States. And the United States was the brink of war. It needed oil. And Mexico became very good ally and supplied 40% of the oil that the United States needed at that time. And so there have been many instances in which the United States has learned that the developing Mexico's petroleum industry is good for the national security.
Right. And so I think you bring out an interesting point in that narrative is the ally relationship that the United States and Mexico have had. In listening to some of the rhetoric that's being thrown about these days, you wouldn't think that we were two allied countries. You would think that we were something else was going on. If we're talking about building walls and sealing the border, it doesn't seem to jive with this longstanding relationship that these two countries have had.
Right now, much of the tension is the result of the undocumented migration that continues to come from Mexico to the United States. It is a problem. In 2006, Mexico did try to initiate proposals to curb undocumented migration at the Mexican end. However, the negotiations fell apart. And the problem is that, yes, you have undocumented migration, but you also have economic trade between the United States and Mexico, which has been good for both nations. Today, Mr. Trump states that Mexico is just taking over the trade, that the United States has over $50 billion deficit in goods trades. And that is partially correct. I'm not sure exactly what his analysis is. But in goods, yes, Mexico, the United States has a $50 billion trade deficit. But when it comes into looking at the services that the United States provides Mexico, Mexico has a $10 billion deficit. So it's much more complicated. And one very important point that we can't forget is that when we look at goods that are coming from Mexico to the United States, these are part of the export-oriented industries, or what we call maquiladoras. And 90% of these manufacturing plants are U.S. So they're owned by the United States. So these manufacturing plants are operating in Mexico, and then they export goods to the United States, but the profits belong to U.S. corporations. And that also needs to be very, you know, it's a very important point that we need to look at.
Right. We're talking about the book, The Politics of Dependency, The U.S. Reliance on Mexican Oil and Farm Labor. We're talking with University of Texas at Austin professor Martha Menchaca. We invite your phone calls. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the history of the Bracero program, how the United States has used Mexican labor. We turned it on, we turn it off like a faucet when we need to, turn it off with Operation Wetback and other things when we don't want the labor, what it's meant for like NAFTA, other issues. When we come back, this is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Build the wall and have Mexico pay for it. It's a political slogan, but the reality is the United States is addicted to cheap labor from Mexico. From the Bracero program to Operation Wetback and now the H-2A guest worker program visa. And we're talking about the U.S. reliance on Mexican labor. And we're speaking with Professor of Anthropology at University of Texas at Austin, Martha Menchaca. Her book is The Politics of Dependency, U.S. Reliance on Mexican Oil and Farm Labor. And we got a phone call if you want to call in, 210-614-8980. Mark is on the line. Mark, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm sorry I got in late, and maybe y'all talked about this, but I obviously don't think that Donald Trump has much of a chance of building a wall if he gets elected. But the question that I've always heard, and I've never, maybe the guest has the answer to, is I've always heard that Mexico very tightly controls migration into Mexico from its southern border, but doesn't really do anything to try to stop the migration from Mexico into the U.S. and even pushes through folks that are coming from even farther south. Is that true?
All right, Mark, thank you for the call. And let's go to Professor Menchaca for an answer.
Yes, Mexico has its southern border with Latin America, and therefore it does try to stop migration. People that go through the southern border, their intent is not to go to Mexico, but rather to migrate through Mexico into the United States. And it has been a problem for Mexico. But in its northern borders, we know that one of the major problems has been that U.S. Congress has not been able to agree to reform immigration policy, and this has been a major problem.
I don't know if it's the point that Mark is making, but other people have drawn this out and trying to show that there is some sort of level of hypocrisy that Mexico is willing to enforce its border on the south with Guatemala. And even U.S. Border Patrol is now lending a hand in that effort, providing consultants and also other assistance. And people say, well, look, I mean, if Mexico they want to illegal immigrate into the United States, but they want to have their own border, and that as if that means something.
Well, I agree that Mexico does not do enough in its southern border, but it also has taken on the position that this is a U.S. problem that they are having to deal with because the migrants are going through Mexico. In 2006, President Fox tried to negotiate a treaty with Mexico in regards to a guest worker program, and they were willing to prevent people from crossing the border by requiring permits to leave Mexico. They also had developed a penalty system for people who would be deported. Mexico, that part, the Mexican Congress says, how can you penalize already poor people that are being deported? But one of the important parts of the plan that Mexico had was that it would create an incentive program of grants, deduction of taxes to attract people to return from the United States to Mexico. So they did have a very broad plan, but it was rejected. It was like not considered, and this was during the time of in 2005 when U.S. Congress, well, House of Representatives was divided,
right.
And they wanted to make it more difficult. They wanted to criminalize border crossing more than it is, and the Senate, on the other hand, pretty much put a stop to that.
Right, but to a point about the hypocrisy of controlling the borders and illegal immigration, you write in your book in a lot of detail about how the United States has been very aggressive, whether it is private companies or sometimes it is the government in itself, trying to lure labor from Mexico into the United States legally and illegally in order to lower wages, bust unions, and provide cheap goods and services. This is a pattern that the United States has had for a very long time.
Right. What I argue in the book is that in the case of farm labor, Mexico and the United States, by just leaving the movement of the supply and demand continue to work, it benefits employers. But today, one of the very important things too is the farm lobby since 2005 has been lobbying and trying to pass through the Ag Job bills some reforms in relation to farm labor, either expanding the guest worker program or giving stabilizing the undocumented status of farm workers.
Right. So let me ask you about that. So when we hear about in some immigration reform proposals, one of them is about allowing a guest worker program, but not allowing a pathway to citizenship or some sort of providing a legal residency to work for people who are illegally, but no pathway to citizenship. That would allow this continued shadow subsidies for agricultural industry in the United States and in the creation of a permanent second-class citizenship for those farm workers.
Right. And that is a debate. And in my view, it becomes very unfair for the farm worker who is caught in this binational problem in which Mexico does not protect the individual. And one of the reasons they're leaving Mexico is because of the agricultural trade between the United States and Mexico.
Yeah, so
Mexico,
talk about how NAFTA hollowed out the agricultural trade in Mexico.
Mexico is the third largest supplier of agricultural goods from the United States, approximately $18 billion, much more than the European Union. And this really began in 1995 when Mexico began to restructure its agricultural system, similar to the U.S., trying to remove the small farmer out of agriculture and really making it into an agribusiness system, which is more efficient.
Right, because Mexico had a lot of small farms, ejidos.
Exactly. And that system the government converted in 1990, and gradually it changed. The idea was that all the displaced farm workers, farmers and farm laborers, that they would be integrated into manufacturing. The problem is that they were not. And what we ended up having is great unemployment. Approximately 3 million agricultural jobs and agricultural workers and farmers left the occupation, and at the same time that this is taking place, the United States needs labor. So
right.
It's a symbiotic relationship of one nation needs labor, and in the other nation, agricultural system was restructured, and it was devastating for the small time farmer. It was great for agribusiness. It was also great for business between U.S. and Mexico corporations, but it did not benefit the poor people. And that's one of the problems with a lot of the trade relations between Mexico and the United States.
Okay,
it benefits corporations, but not necessarily the working people.
All right. So we have obviously in our political discussions in the United States, a lot of resentment and anger about illegal immigration coming into the United States. But what do people not get about that is fueling the hostility?
Right now, Mexico is at a point in its history that it protects itself. It's very efficient. It's never going to allow the United States to treat it savagely as it did in the 19th century when U.S. corporations and the government called the shots. And this Mexico does protect itself. The problem is that very often Mexico does not pass the benefits of trade to the Mexican people. Mexican people have been placed in austerity since the 1980s, and it's ongoing. And so in terms of the undocumented population, what I've seen is that the people who are farm laborers, that type of undocumented population, the U.S. wants. But people who are not farm laborers, the United States does not want those type of Mexican people coming into the nation.
Because they're more visible?
Well, but both, because they're visible, but they are in the cities.
And then they'll compete for other jobs.
And they do compete for other jobs in service.
All right. Professor Martha Menchaca, we're out of time. It was great speaking with you. The book is The Politics of Dependency, or as she calls it, codependency, frequently in her book, The U.S. Reliance on Mexican Oil and Farm Labor. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you.
This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Paul Flav and David Martin Davies. Our engineer is Doug DeMore. Management and oversight provided by News Director Shelley Koffler and VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.
Tomorrow on The Source, the U.S. Supreme Court last week voted to uphold a law that prohibits gun ownership for those guilty of domestic violence. This applies to those even if they're convicted of a misdemeanor domestic violence charge. Gun rights activists are strongly opposing this ruling, but it's being hailed as a victory for those opposed to domestic abuse and gun violence. That's on The Source, tomorrow at 3 here on KSTX 89.1 FM.
With Manage My Account, CPS Energy customers who are enrolled can see information about their account and near real-time energy use online anytime. This free service also provides ability to view and pay bills online, start, stop, or transfer service, and more. Customers may now also enroll online in budget payment plan and auto pay. More about Manage My Account is at cpsenergy.com. This nonprofit message is underwritten by CPS Energy. News and Views, KSTX, San Antonio, on the air at 89.1 FM and online at tpr.org. It's 4 o'clock.